promise not to be longer than that, Lord willing. It's good to be with you. Thank you so much. I get to see some of these guys that I've known for so many years, about once or twice a year. I love, as you can probably tell my size, I love the game of football, always have. And I get to referee football, and about once or twice a year down here at Atwood. And this year, I think I'm so big, I'm not sure I can run up and down that field this time, but I got to figure out something in the next month or so. But I heard a fellow one time talk about a guy that loved football so much. He was an athlete. I say that. He really he was a pretty good athlete, but he just – his ability to think all the way around the box and understand the game and everything was not there, okay? But these two teams were fighting it out for the championship, and score was tied up, and they were marching down the field, and their quarterback got hurt. The quarterback was so smart, good kid, strong, but he was hurt. He came off the field. And so the coach had to turn to this other ball player. Like I said, he was a good athlete, just not really smart. And so he told him, he said, "Now you go out there and you run this play." He said, don't do anything else, just run this play." He said, "Okay, coach." So he goes out there, and he immediately, as they go to the line, they break the huddle and he goes to the line. He notices they've got two linebackers, and they're going to crash. One was 7 and one was 6. And he was calling the play, and right as he was calling the play, he changed the play. He called an audible. And he started yelling, "14, 14!" And sure enough, the whole team ran play 14, and the running back, of all things, scored. And they won the ball game, and the coach was livid. I mean, he was mad as a hornet. And the ball player came back over there and he said, "Son, what on earth caused you to call an audible?" He said, "Well, coach, I saw number 7. And he said, "I saw number 6. And he said, "I added them together and came up with 14. He said, "Son, don't you know 7 and 6 is 13? He thought about it a minute. He said, "Well, coach, if I was smart as you, we'd have lost that ball game." So, anyway, one of my favorite stories in all of the Bible is probably one of my more condemning passages. It hurts right here. It's not the story you would think. Luke spends a great deal of time in his gospel talking about women, talking about the outcasts of society, and on one occasion he tells about the widow who goes to the service. And back then in the temple, in the court of women, they had these 13 trumpet-looking boxes. And there you would put in your contribution, your tithe. And Jesus has just been with the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and he's pretty tired of that, but he's been with them, and they've just been darting questions at them. The Sadducees had come up, and he, of course, you understand, they didn't believe in a bodily resurrection whatsoever. And so Jesus is going back and forth with them on this discussion. But after a while, he sees that what they're really after is trying to capture him in a bad spot rather than to really look for the truth. And somehow, I'm not sure how he did it. The Bible really doesn't give us all the details. But he slips away from all of that, and he's over in the treasury, and he's watching as people put in of their, as he calls it, surplus. And as he does so, he sees this woman put in 2 mites, 2 farthing, 2 copper coins. I mean, they were a 16th. The Roman coin, the Assyrian, was a 16th of of a denarii, which was a day's wage. So, I mean, you talk about small pennies. I mean, this is probably like our penny is today. It's just not worth much. That's all she had. Now, I'm not saying that's all she had in her pocket, because the Bible is very specific in verses 2, 3, and 4. Not only was it all she had, I mean, it's all she had, period. She gave out of her poverty. She gave everything she had. And Jesus says she gave more than all of these other people. Why? Because it was all that she had. It was all she had to live on. She didn't have any more money. Now, I've given on certain Sundays, I've given when I didn't know where the next meal was coming from. I've given when I knew I was going to get paid in a few days. I've given when I knew I had another way of juggling the funds a little bit, and that way I had it when it went through the bank. I've done some of that. But for the life of me, I've never given everything I had. And there's not too many people that I know have. That's why Jesus was ecstatic. In Mark's gospel, in the same recording of the story, Jesus is so impressed, he calls his disciples over. He says, "You see that woman over there? She just gave 2 copper coins. Now, all these other people gave out of their surplus, but she gave 2 copper coins. Jesus was so impressed. So impressed. You know, the Bible doesn't say anything what the disciples said. In fact, you're left with the understanding they didn't say a word. Here Jesus is excited about somebody who gave everything that they had. They gave 2 copper coins. She didn't have anything else to live on. She was a widow. She didn't have much in the first place. But that's all she had. And Jesus was so impressed, he had to tell somebody. He calls his disciples over. They don't say a word. They walk outside the building, and one of them says, "Look, teacher. Look at these magnificent stones in this wonderful building." And that just pretty well cramped Jesus' style, if you want to call it that. He had been so excited about this woman, but the disciples didn't say a word. They go outside, and they're all up in the air. "Look at these magnificent stones. What a beautiful building." Jesus says, "You see this building? You see these stones? Not one stone is going to be left standing on the other that won't be thrown down." And you know what? He was right. In 40 short years, Titus and his Roman army would come barreling through Jerusalem, and not one stone was left standing on the other. It's almost as if Jesus were saying, in 40 short years, this place is going to be destroyed. And then where's your faith going to be? You see, the Jews had thought that as long as they had the temple, as long as they had God, God was in the Holy of Holies, as long as they had their temple, everything was good. God was good to them. He was providing for their harvest. He would take care of them. He was constantly providing for them. They could go and have their sins rolled forward. They did the annual atonement. Everything was great because God was there. And he was like a security blanket to them. "Look at this beautiful building." So I have to ask you the same question. In 40 short years, where's your faith going to be? You see, for people like, I don't pick on Greg, but he's my age, so we're there. But for Greg and I, you had 40 years to 50, I'm 57. Where are you? 58? 55? You had 40 years to that. And that's knocking 100 pretty good. There hadn't been too many McCaskills live past 65, so I don't have a whole lot more time. Where's my faith going to be then? Where's your faith going to be? What if we just said 100 years? Then where's your faith going to be? I think sometimes we get so caught up in our cars and our houses and our jobs and our work. And I know we've got to provide for our family. I know that. I understand that. That's a responsibility God gives us, right? But at the end of the day, we put so much effort into those things, we leave off the God things. I think we need to really challenge our churches as elders and as deacons, as ministers, as Bible school teachers, to put our heart not only into our giving on Sunday, our giving as a whole. Our time and our energy and our effort. Because that real nice vehicle that you get to drive, you're only going to be able to use it here. You're not going to be able to use it there. And that real nice house that you've got, again, it's only a temporary living place. That's not where our home is. So this story brings up more than just two copper coins. Jesus is looking down the road, if you will, for us, and he gives us a real strong lesson in where my heart is. I think that's what separates us from the world. So where's your heart this afternoon? Where is God in all of this? We've come to worship, and worship is so important. But at the end of the day, God is more concerned about how we live as to how we worship. Those two go hand in hand. They go together. But God's looking into our heart and asking us, where's your heart today? As you think about these thoughts,